Hello and welcome to episode one of the Boxing Podcast, sponsored by 32 Red. I'm your host, Dev Sarni. You may remember me from another podcast. Well, I've got a new lick of paint. It's a rebrand, yeah? I'm back with Mr. Steve Lillis. Steve, how are you?
I'm good. I think I did a podcast in a previous life as well, but I'm back here with you, Dev, on the Boxing Podcast.
That's right, the Boxing Podcast. You thought we were down and out, me and Lillis. I'm talking to you listeners at home. You thought we were down and out while the referee stood over us counting. He got up to about eight, maybe 8.5. But just like Tyson Fury against Deontay Wilder, yes, I went there, Steve, we got up.
You had to get that one in, didn't you?
I had to get there. How you doing, Steve? What have
I'm
you been
good.
Doing?
I'm really well. Excited for Tyson Fury's performance last week. Excited for, you know, possibility of Amir Khan fighting Crawford, and I'm even more excited for what's going to happen in Manchester in 2 weeks between Josh Warrington and Carl Frampton. That could be something special, and a fight where I wouldn't be surprised if we ended up in rematch territory there.
Oh, good Lord. It would be, well, it's going to be, I know it's going to be a Christmas cracker. Well, this week we are bringing you not one, but two Hall of Fame boxing promoters. We've got a bit of Frank Warren on the show, yeah? We've got a bit of Bob Arum on the show. We hear from former two-weight world champion Carl Frampton as he counts down to December 22nd, where he gets his shot at Josh Warrington's IBF world featherweight title. And also, we've got Bradley Skeet coming up on the Boxing Podcast. Stick with us, plug yourself in, and enjoy. Last weekend, it was Deontay Wilder against Tyson Fury at the Staples Center in LA for the WBC World Heavyweight title. It was epic. It was a fight that will live long in the memory. Social media has been awash with memes, with fallout. And my man, Steve Lillis, caught up with one of the key men who put the fight together. It's Tyson's promoter, Frank Warren.
Frank, first of all, thanks for joining us. But obviously, we had the big fight the weekend, Deontay Wilder, Tyson Fury. Where do we stand as of today, Thursday, with the potential rematch?
Well, we're in discussions at the moment with his team, led by Shelley Finkel. Also, the WBC are about to decide whether there should be an immediate rematch recommended, which I believe they will do so. We're on for the rematch.
I mean, are you yourself and Shelley on the same hymn sheet? I know you've got a good working relationship. You know, is it all fights are hard to make, especially when there's so much money involved. But do you seem to be together at the moment?
Yeah, he says Deontay wants it, and obviously Tyson wants it. So it's a matter of us, you know, getting it over the line.
Do you think there's a big chance it could come to England, you know, London or Manchester?
Look, you know, anything's possible at the moment. It's just a matter of, logistically working out what the, you know, financially where it works best. Obviously Tyson wants to fight over here, he wants the fight to be, he actually said he wants it at Old Trafford. That's what, in an ideal world, what we'd like, but we've got a lot of talks to go on before we even get to that stage. The good thing is that both fighters, being the fighters that they are, being the warriors that they are, they want the rematch.
And the other night, going back to the fight when you was in Los Angeles, what was your reaction? I mean, we know about the Mexicans card when the British judge went 1-1-3, 1-1-3, was it? But, you know, do you feel that sometimes when our judges go abroad, they try too much to maybe help the away fighter to play this sense of fairness, in their opinion?
I think in their mind there's a sense of fairness. I thought Phil's a great, great referee. But that was, for my opinion, that was poor judging. And it happens quite a bit. I mean, you think recently Terry Flanagan fought, same thing happened there with a British judge. You know, it was in his hometown, but a British judge went the other way. You look at the Canelo fights and so forth, some of the judging is terrible. What really annoys me about it is nobody's accountable. You know, it's not like if they were Premiership football referees or any division, they would get demoted. These guys just go on and judge another fight. there's no sanctions against it for poor judging.
Boxing seems, you know, littered with these sort of cases, and there's rarely anything is ever done. But do you think, you know, will we ever get to a stage where they're demoted? I know, you know, we've had some fights where judges have been taken out the firing line for 6 months. That rarely happens. Do you think there's ever going to get to a stage where there's going to be regular sanctions against judges for this sort of thing?
Well, there should be. You know, the fight on Saturday should not have been, nor the Canelo fights, they should not have been about the controversial scoring. They should have been about what great fights they were. And they're getting clouded over by poor judgment. You know, Lennox, I watched the playback of the fight, and I heard Lennox saying about the promoters paid them. Well, that's correct. The promoters paid them, but we don't appoint them. They're appointed by the relative body, which in that case was the WBC. And of course, and then we have to pay them. Well, we don't pick the judges. They pick the judges.
Would you want a British judge if there was a rematch?
No. I think all the judges should be all impartial, in as much that they shouldn't come from any of the countries where the events are taking place or where the fighters are from. They should be all from outsiders. I'm really, really not happy with this situation.
And how is Tyson since he got back? Because, you know, he's come back a people's champion. He's not just, you know, you can claim the best heavyweight in the world. He's now the most popular heavyweight in Britain.
Well, he's the people's champion. That's the difference between him and Anthony Joshua. You know, Anthony's a lovely guy. When I've met him in the past, I've seen him for a long time. But he's become corporate. He's the face of Matchroom. He's the face of corporate Matchroom. You know, as a journalist, you can't pick up the phone and speak to Anthony Joshua.
No, you can't, no.
You have to go through, you know, a lot of people. Whereas Tyson, he's a man of the people. He's with the people. He's out there with them.
Well, you know, with Tyson, if people want to speak and they go through your press office or text someone, they might know who knows Tyson.
Yeah, it's done. It's done. It's a, you know, that's what it is. And it does, I mean, Talk Sport, who the Hearns have an exclusive radio deal with, they've now made Tyson in their boxing rankings the number one heavyweight.
And how is Tyson since he got back? Have you spoken to him the last day or so?
Yeah, I think he's in. You know, he's very disappointed with the decision, but he's in good spirits with the reception he's had from his family, you know, from the fans. I mean, everyone loves a warrior, and they love, you know, people who are game, who are brave, and all boxers are brave. But I mean, he went over and above the call of duty. That last round, I mean, I was outside the ring, obviously watching it. I didn't think he was going to get up, but you think he had the strength, the character, and mind to say that. I was lying there, I got my legs for a second, I couldn't feel them, I didn't want to get up, I'd be on wobbly legs, and the referee stopped it. That's why I stayed still. When I felt good, then I got up. That tells you a lot about it.
Final one on Tyson. If, say, you know, obviously, you know, you're making all the efforts to make the Wilder fight, but if that fight was, say, delayed till the second half of next year, would you look for an interim fight in the summer just to keep him active?
He's not going to be inactive. If that is the case, that's what will happen. But I'm hoping that we can get this fight on sooner rather than later.
And another big fight in a couple of weeks. Carl Frampton, Josh Warrington. How excited for that one, Frank?
Well, again, you know, we're delivering great fights to the fans. I mean, that's the best British domestic matchup out there. You know, when you talk about as regarding fighters who are top of their game. You know, Tyson Fury, Deontay Wilder, two undefeated fighters at the top of their game. You've got Carl Frampton, got one loss on his record, split decision, and you've got Josh Warrington, who's undefeated. They're magnificent fighters. These are great fights. These are the sort of fights that, you know, if you're going to have to pay for pay-per-view, these are the type of fights that the customer should be getting value for, plus a great undercard.
And, of course, obviously you're not going to give a prediction on the fight. You look after both fighters. It's another one that could have rematch written all over it next summer at a football stadium in Belfast or Leeds.
I agree with you. You know, for me, it's a flip of a coin fight. You know, there's a case for both of them.
Well, that was Frank Warren. Steve, it's been, you know, nearly a week now since this great fight. Talk to me. How are you reflecting on it all? What about all this stuff about a 10 count? There's videos going out there about, oh, did Fury secretly get knocked out? And then there's people with stopwatches and things like that. What's going on?
I think he just beat the count. If you look at most stopwatches, he beat the count. And it isn't 10 seconds. It's the referee's count of 10.
Exactly.
So let's get that, we get, I can think of counts before that could have saved the career. I go back to, without going too far away from Wilder Fury, when David Price fought Tony Thompson in the second fight. The count for Tony Thompson was a long 10 count when he got up in the third round. It was well over 10. I think it was about 11, 12 seconds, if you want to go by what a stopwatch says. Look, it's what the referee's 10 count is. He takes up from the timekeeper and takes the count from there on his call. So, I have no problem at all. He beat the count. You know what? To be wake up after... the count of five or six, and at the end of that, minute later, be fighting back, be the aggressor, just tells you so much about Fury as the person. And perhaps you can understand why he will come home the people's champion. I'm wondering if he hadn't gone down in that round and got there and it was a draw, if he kept on his feet and got a decision, would he be as big a hero as he is? Because to the casual fan, it's not about how great the fight was or, what happened in the fight. It's about those seconds, as you say, all the memes, the Undertaker comparisons. Yeah. It's just remarkable. It's almost added to the fame, the infamy, if you want to call it, of Tyson Fury. He was absolutely, enough adjectives don't describe how good he was in that fight. He was absolutely superb. And, Deontay Wilder, I don't think he was that great in the fight. But what he showed, for a 15-stone man, he's got an equaliser that can take anybody out.
Yeah, I mean, my goodness. And just back to that knockdown, and you talk about, maybe it's almost better that it did happen. And sometimes boxing becomes storytelling on a massive, platform with a world to watch. And Tyson Fury, in that kind of 90 seconds where he went down, got back up, started taunting Wilder and then backing up Wilder as the fight was ending. That seemed to almost encapsulate what he's been through in the last 2 years. It was something quite epic. But yeah, what would you say about Wilder? It's ridiculous that he's like a 15-stone man who's just, walking down these 18-stone men.
Imagine if he was 14 stone, 200 pound on a cruiserweight. Yeah. What damage would he be doing there? It's incredible the power he's got. And it is just power. And a lot of people were saying for when the, I'm sure, inevitable rematch happens, a lot of people are even more heavy on Fury now, saying he will have the extra training camp. His timing would have got better. But all that time will count for nothing if someone like Wilder hits you on the chin. And Fury knows that as well now.
And what about this warmth with which the British public, and actually not just the British public, the American public, the world, the warmth that the world has given Tyson Fury after that fight. Surely this man now has BBC Sports Personality of the Year written all over him.
You know what? You'd like to think so. Obviously, the guy, there's it, Geraint Thomas, who won the Tour de France, goes close. But what you like to think so. But call me a cynic. Call me what you like, Dev Sahni. Call me what you want. But you know what I think they'll do? I think they'll put the boxing section of Sports Personality of the Year on the show at the time when you're going to forget things, that first segment up.
No.
That would surprise me. I'm a cynic. I'm an old school cynic. That's what might happen. What I think he might win, Tyson Fury, is the moment of the year. They on the one show the other night, they announced all the various great sporting moments of the year, and Fury's was a late addition. And the one they spoke about at the very end, which gave him a bit more airtime. That's what I wouldn't be surprised if he did win. But, you can see him certainly finishing the first three for Sports Personality. He's now a national hero. What it is, this loving they've got in America, when was the last time there was a heavyweight champion who had his personality? Lennox Lewis was one of the all-time greats, but his personality wasn't that great. You'd have to go back to a lunatic like Mike Tyson for the way he projected himself. When you had someone who the American public could, if you want to say warm to or dislike, whatever they want, but sit up and take notice of. It's almost like when you go to Las Vegas as a British boxing fan or a British boxing journalist, you still check into the MGM and staff that were there years ago talk about Ricky Hatton and the week he fought Floyd Mayweather.
Yeah,
it's that sort of impact he's having, but on the American public in general. And he's come back here a national hero. I mean, papers, talk about, papers knock you down to build you up tomorrow. They knocked him down to build him up this week. And he is a national treasure right now.
Yeah, he was at Old Trafford earlier this week for Man United against Arsenal. Got a lovely reception from the crowd there as well. It's quite something. And that moment where he gets knocked down and he gets back up again, that honestly That is going to live long, especially on social media. I saw it used the other day. I think it was in relation to Man United versus Arsenal, where they put Jose Mourinho's face on Tyson Fury as he got knocked down.
I saw that, yeah.
And they put the Arsenal manager on Wilder, and then he gets up, and it's great, isn't it?
It's the sort of thing that's going to end up in music videos. You know, you see these music videos of bits of boxing in them sometimes. You know, how colossal is the rematch going to be? Provided Frank Warren and Shelley Finkel can get it together. I mean, Frank spoke about the rematch in our chat, and obviously the talks have started, but no idea whether it's going to go to the America, whether it's go to Britain. It's going to go where it can generate the most money.
Absolutely.
And I'm just wondering, I've got no inside knowledge or anything, Dev, but I'm wondering if it's the sort of fight now that is made for a big Las Vegas casino who could pay a site fee that would blow out what a box office would get in this country.
Yeah, absolutely. And the early indications of American pay-per-view numbers have been very good and kind of above their expectations.
That's
so
right,
imagine
I saw that.
With the hype that it's created for a rematch, you're probably looking at doubling those figures. And then, hey, you've got two pay-per-view stars in America. You've got to go with that, really, in my view.
You're talking of double those figures, what they're talking about. Say you got, what American pay-per-views go for, you've got, say, 700,000 pay-per-view buys. You're closing in on grossing $50 million from pay-per-view. You throw in a site fee from a Las Vegas casino of several million dollars. Oh. You throw in ticket sales and overseas sales and TV sales and pay-per-view with BT Sport Box Office, who done a brilliant job last week. You throw that in, you're then coming round to a $100 million super fight. How many of them are there in boxing right now?
Not very many. And what a start that was to December. December the 1st, it was Tyson Fury, Deontay Wilder, LA, the Staples Center, WBC World Heavyweight title. Tell you what, December is a huge month for boxing. What about December 22nd? Steve, let's talk about this. At the Manchester Arena, IBF World Featherweight Champion Josh Warrington against Carl Frampton, a two-weight world champion. This isn't a mess about. It's a proper world title fight. This is two fighters at the top of their game. Steve, tell me how hyped you are for that one.
You know what? I'm not hyped because I just know it's going to be brilliant. In about September, when all people started speculating on the number of pay-per-views there was going to be or were going to be in the last 3 months of 2018, if you put them all in a list and the number one I wanted to see out of all of them, I'll give you the three I want. There was a lot of them, eight or nine potential.
Give them to me, Steve. Give them to me.
Number one I wanted to see was Josh Warrington against Carl Frampton. That was number one. And I'll be honest, and number two was George Groves and Callum Smith, and Deontay Wilder, Tyson Fury was number three. I thought Fury could win the fight, but I couldn't ever foresee the drama that was going to be. So that sounds a crazy running order, I know.
But, so are you suggesting before these fights were made, these were fights that you had in your head that you wanted to see this year? No, is that what you're saying?
A lot of them were announced, or, you know, there was a lot of pay-per-views, weren't there, being speculated among media that would happen between now and the end of the year, and quite a few had taken place. Brooke Khan was in there as well. But that was the order I fancied as great fights. And this one in 2 weeks is the one. I was down at the Peacock Gym on Wednesday, you know, which is a real college of knowledge of boxing in that place.
He's done it. You've thrown in the college of knowledge.
It really is, you know, and the number of people are changing their minds. I spoke to someone yesterday and it lent me towards Carl Frampton yesterday, but I'm changing my mind. I'm almost like the man who believes the last person he spoke to at a train station. And that tells you what a good fight it is. As I mentioned to Frank Warren in the interview, I believe this is a fight that goes into rematch territory.
Yeah, it could well be one of those. And Steve, you gave Carl Frampton a call earlier on this week to ask him how his camp was going. So let's plug into that. Let's hear from the Jackal himself heading into yet another world title fight on December 22nd against Josh Warrington.
Carl, thanks for joining us on the podcast. First of all, the obvious question, how's it all going with Jamie Moore there in Salford?
Yeah, it's going good. I'm enjoying it. I'm enjoying boxing. I'm enjoying training with Jamie and the rest of the boys. Nigel Travis as well, obviously, he's helping Jamie out. And good bunch of lads in the gym to train alongside. And I'm really just really enjoying it at the minute, Steve.
How intense is it for you in training right now?
Yeah, well, this is probably, this week approaching is probably the hardest week. Well, this week and next week are probably the two hardest weeks of training. So this is, we're right in the swing of it now. And obviously the weight and stuff's coming down, and we're going through more rounds and on the pads and in sparring, etc. So it's tough, but it's something that I'm very used to. And then we'll start to taper off the week before the fight. But at this point in time, Steve, I genuinely feel like I'm in a good place. I'm where I need to be. And again, just looking forward to the fight now.
As a boxer, when you've been to the well in major fights as often as you have, do you, when it gets to these real two hard weeks, knowing you've done them so often, does it make you dislike your opponent more?
Nah, no, not really. I think I'm a pretty laid-back person, and I don't necessarily have a dislike for Josh Warrington, but I think there's something in there bubbling beneath the surface. I think he's a little bit more arrogant than what he lets on. Just a few things that I've seen recently, and I think that, it's starting to seep out, and maybe he's getting a wee bit carried away with winning this world title. And, you know, fair play to him, he's a world champion. He's entitled to be proud of that, but I think he's maybe getting a little bit carried away, and there's a bit of arrogance in there somewhere that he's trying his best to keep away from the public.
What has he said that sort of not got under your skin, but made you think?
Well, just a few wee things that he said. He said he's going to knock me out and stuff. He doesn't need to say that. You know, it's a bit of an outrageous comment coming from a guy who's got has many knockout wins as I've had world title fights nearly, you know what I mean? So I don't think he needed to say that. And also just a couple of little things that he said and done that I feel like it's just a wee bit of arrogance bubbling under the surface somewhere.
Do you think it's a case of the sort of attitude he showed before Selby might come to light now in the next couple of weeks?
Potentially, but it's not just remain and do what I've always done, and I respect opponents if I'm respected, but you know, I take it all with a pinch of salt and carry on thinking about myself and my own performance. I don't really get too caught up in that thing, but we'll see. As the fight gets a bit closer and he gets a bit more on edge, he may say a few more things that maybe aren't that savoury, but it doesn't bother me, to be honest.
I mean, you're a proud man like any fighter. So I remember that when you fought the Australian Luke Jackson, he said he was going to knock you out. And okay, people fight to say things to sell fights, but I remember that seemed to rattle you a little bit, where you was insisting what you was going to do to him back.
Yeah, it just annoyed me. I suppose it just gives you a wee bit between your teeth. Or maybe I don't know if Warrington's saying that, if he's saying he's going to knock me out because he wants me to believe that he's going to come head first and this is going to be an all-out war. But I have a feeling that the tactics that he uses on the fight aren't going to be what everyone expects him to be. I think he may go backwards at times. I think he may try to burgle rounds and steal them in the last sort of few seconds of last 15 or 20 seconds of a round. I think they may be his tactics. But we'll be ready for a few different things. So these things, it doesn't matter. I'll be ready, Steve, for whatever he brings to the table, and that's going to be the difference. I can adapt mid-fight if I have to. So whatever he brings to the table, I'll be fine. I'll be able to deal with.
When you're a couple of weeks out before a big fight, and so, you know, Comrade Cummings has been preparing for a fight this week, Stephen Wall's in a fight on the same bill as you. You all live together. What are you all like to live with? Do you keep it out of each other's way? So I haven't seen the jokes so much on Twitter lately, where you've been putting hot spoons on each other's necks and locking yourselves out and stuff.
It got a bit too much. It got to the point where someone was going to get a spoon stuck to their head if they done that again to me. So, it's good. Look, we're in a small flat in Bolton. Me, Stevie and Conrad, we live together, and I suppose we are on top of each other all the time. It's just a two-bedroom flat, and there's kind of one sitting area with a TV, so we're always on top of each other, but we don't mind. Big Stevie's a good lad, and he's domesticated, I would say. Like myself, I feel like we're both domesticated, but Conrad's a mummy's boy and doesn't do anything. You have to clean his bum nearly after him, which is a wee bit annoying, but again, Conrad's another good lad, and that's just the way it is.
But you're the 2-weight world champion, so I hope you get the bedroom to yourself.
Of course, that was the deal. I was happy enough living in a hotel, so the boys wanted me to come and stay with them in the apartment, and the only way I was going to do that is if I got the room to my own. So that's what happens when you're top of the pile, Steve.
Well, as a boxer, when you see what's happened in America this weekend with the Tyson Fury-Deontay Wilder fight, Do you worry that the same thing could happen to you you get robbed by judges, just like Josh Warrington might worry? Does that concern you at all?
It doesn't concern me in the slightest, to be honest. Obviously, I think if you're going into a fight concerned about what judges are going to do, then I don't know. It's probably not the right frame of mind. I just focus on my own performance, and if I know I'm winning, I think. You look at what happened in the Fury and Wilder fight. You know, everyone agrees that Fury probably should have won that fight. The knockdowns, obviously, in the last round and the one before it didn't do him any favours, but we still all had Fury winning the fight. And people know, you know what I mean? So if there's a bad decision goes against me, the people are going to know, and they can judge and watch fights for themselves. But again, it's something I'm not really concerned about. I'll go in and give it my best, and I think that should be good enough to win this fight.
And just finally, before we let you go, could you pay your own personal tribute to Tyson Fury as a fighter, his performance, and as a man?
I just think you talk about people being determined, and there's one sense of determination in coming back and losing, however, you know, is it about 10 stone or whatever he lost, you know, being, you know, talking about drinking constantly. Overcoming alcoholism, overcoming drug abuse, overcoming the weight issue and his lifestyle, getting everything back on track, having them two kind of warm-up fights, people writing him off left, right and centre, and to go and put in a performance like he did and look so good in doing it. And then the knockdown in the last round, he was knocked out. You know what I mean? I've never seen anything like it. His eyes were closed and he got up. I've never seen a more determined man in my life, and a credit to him. And the thing is, now that draw, I don't think it does him any harm. You know, he still finds the sharpness and his timing and everything else from the big long layoff. So I think if the rematch happens with Wilder, he's going to be better. And I think, you know, I wasn't confident he was going to win that fight, but into it, I'm sure that he'll win a rematch.
Steve, there seemed to be, you know, in the build up to this, there was a launch press tour for Frampton and Warrington, and there was a lot of respect. It was like, you know, it was like that Jose Mourinho. I mentioned him again, but I've got Mourinho on the mind at the moment. It was like his press conference where it was respect, 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 all of that. That was Warrington and Frampton. But now, Frampton said something. He's saying Warrington's getting a bit arrogant, and secretly he's arrogant. He's scratching away, and it's going to come out. What do you think of all of that?
Yeah, well, he got a bit like this in the Luke Jackson build-up. Well, I can see why they're both getting like this. This week, you know, we're just coming into the end of now, and next week are the two real hardest weeks of training before camp ends. So they're at a stage now the weight's really starting to come off. They're getting hungry. You know, they're putting their body through hell in sparring over the previous few days, and the last, you know, next Friday or Saturday they'll do their last spars. You know, so they're at a stage of camp now where they're putting themselves through a barrier that's of hurt that few of us can even imagine. So that person you're getting ready to beat is the person's who's causing that. So if he says something like, "I'm going to knock you out," you're going to think, "Hold on, you can't be working as hard as I am."
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's what's brought in this bit of needle. And I'm sure by the time they have their press conference in Manchester, they'll be positively wanting to get hold of each other and throw each other around the room, because then you're really losing weight. That last week is boredom. You're just, you know, losing the last few pounds. You're hardly training. You know, you just want to kill the nearest person who says the wrong thing. And I can see why they're both getting in this mood at this stage of the fight. Suddenly you're 2 weeks out and you've got your last 10, 11, 12 pounds to lose. You know, you're cutting your calories even more. And you hear an interview on a podcast where the guy says, "I'm going to knock him out." Hold on, why are you saying that to me? Why are you saying that? And I think that's a lot of what comes into it with these boxers, because we saw it with Carl in the build up to Luke Jackson.
Yeah.
You know, when they had that press conference in Belfast, they were quite pally. But of course, when he got back home, he got in training camp, Jackson. He was threatening all sorts of decapitations.
It's quite something, isn't it? Because, I mean, not that anyone would like being told this, but when Carl Frampton is told he's going to get knocked out, it really seems to do something in him. Like, I'll just be like, oh yeah, no, I probably would. But then that's me. I probably would get knocked out.
Carl's the sort of guy I've got to know. You know, I've known him for quite a few years, but I've got to go him really well over the last year or so. And he's the sort of guy who will do anything to help people, like all the commitments he has in the build-up for a fight he has to do. But if he suddenly says, I'm doing nothing for 5 days, interview-wise, PR-wise, just training, I'm not picking up my phone, he's not picking up his phone.
Yeah,
it's just the way he's got that determination. If he says something, you can see how things do get to him.
There was a cracking little line in there from him as well, which I'm sure it will be presented to Josh Warrington at some point, where he said, I think Warrington has had as many knockouts as I've had world title fights. That's savage, that one.
That's savage. But, you know, Josh can possibly turn around and say, I've only had that, that in that world title fight I had, look how I performed. And there's more to come against you.
Well, that's going to be a right Christmas cracker, that show at the Manchester Arena. It's a real card developing there. You've got Mark Heffron against Liam Williams for the British middleweight title. I'm sure we'll be hearing from them in the weeks coming up. Martin Murray, Hassan and Dam, plenty going on. Steve, you must be excited about the card in general.
It's a fantastic show, from top to bottom. That's a good test for Nathan Gorman. And Liam Williams against Mark Heffron. You talk of Christmas crackers. I'll top that with Christmas coming early because of that fight.
What I like about Heffron Williams, it's creative matchmaking. That's what I like. Williams, his opponent kind of fell out of bed. Heffron, his opponent fell out of bed. Let's throw them in together. And it got approved by the board for a British title. And suddenly you've got an absolute banger of a fight right there.
And credit to both fighters for taking this fight. Because they were both in training camps. They're facing each other at pretty short notice. And they both, obviously Heffron was offered it first because he was the mandatory. You know, your opponent's out. Do you want Liam Williams? We can get him. He said yes. Liam Williams, he took 5 minutes to decide. He said, I'll get back to whoever called him from Frank Warren's office. He said, I'll get back to you. And he spoke to Dominic Ingall, and 5 minutes later, he'd agreed to fight. That is how you make a fight. And they're obviously two men who are happy to fight anybody.
Well, that's one we're really looking forward to. December 22nd, IBF World Featherweight title on the line. Josh Warrington against Carl Frampton and a monster of an undercard. Bradley Skeet, Super Skeet, a man on the comeback trail. Well, earlier this year, he took on Kerman Laharaha for the EBU welterweight title, and he came up short. I mean, the guy in Spain proved to be a real monster on the night, a real handful, and announced himself on the European scene by stopping Skeet in two rounds. Well, Super Skeet is back in action next weekend at the Brentwood Centre live on BT Sport. And Steve caught up with him at the Peacock Gym to find out how he was getting on after that defeat to Laharaha.
It was hard, Steve. Not hard in a sense to had to rebuild or do anything different. It was over before it started out in Bilbao. It was quick. I got back in the changing room. It was like what happened there, sort of thing. It wasn't like I got beat up for 12 rounds, and it was just one of them. I say it was hard defeat, getting stopped and everything. It was more mentally to get that back, and I took some time out. I enjoyed a good rest, and then got back in the gym and worked on a few things, and then like I say, come back with flying colours. I had a good win last time out, and now I just got to keep that momentum going and just keep building on that, and then get back to where I was.
The momentum's, going to grow again, we hope, and expect it to. You know, you get, so you get a win in Brentwood next week. That's two since that loss. What are you looking for in 2019?
I'd love to get that European title. If it's a rematch with Laharaha, I'd love that. If he moves on, which I think he will, then pick up the European title and crack on with that. Get back in the world rankings where I was, and have a big 2019.
You're a fighting man. You're mentioning getting back in with a bloke who knocked you out in quick time.
Yeah, it wasn't me. Everyone knows, Steve, that wasn't me. He's a great fighter. Don't get me wrong. The better man won on the night, and you just got to look what he's done since, and he's looked good since, and he's a strong fighter. But I believe that. That wasn't a great performance for myself. Like I said, it was over before it started out there, and I'd like the opportunity if it comes to have another go.
somebody who's already beaten you. Frankie Gavin's calling you out again.
Yeah.
What do you make of that?
He's no interest, Steve. He's unprofessional. He had a big opportunity to go and fight for the European title, and he couldn't even be bothered to make weight. It's just unprofessional. He's irrelevant to me now. Yeah, he's had a win against me. I believe I won the fight anyway, and just got to look how my career's gone on since to his career. Like I say, I wouldn't entertain that. I wouldn't waste my time, money and effort in a training camp for someone who's so unprofessional, who probably wouldn't even make weight for the fight. So got no interest. Like I said on Twitter, Frankie Gavin's as much used to me as a chocolate teapot.
Two men who are professional in their outlook, like yourself, Amir Khan and Kell Brook. Do you still see yourself getting to that level, fighting guys like that?
I'd love to, but that fight, they need to get on. That's the fight, what needs to happen. Khan and Brook, everyone's been speaking about it for so long now, and don't get me wrong, I'd love to be mixed at that level and be up with them top boys, them elite level fighters, but for now, them two just need to get on, man.
But it looks like Amir might be going to Terence Crawford. What do you make of Amir? Are you one of those who think, well, he's just going in there? Or do you like people like myself who think he's got serious balls on him?
Definitely, I'm like yourself, Steve. You've got to rate him. Listen, he's been in and mixed it with the likes of Canelo. He stepped up to middleweight to fight Canelo, 100 pound for pound greats. He don't shy away from fights. There's people talking about he shy away from Brook and whatever. He ain't shying away from the fight. He's proved he's fights anyone, he'll get in with anyone and give it a go. So I rate him in that sense, and that fight just needs to happen now. He's talking about he's fighting Crawford, but the Brook fight needs to happen first, I think.
Big fight coming up very soon, later this month. Josh Warrington and Carl Frampton.
Yeah.
Give us your take and a prediction.
I think it's a great fight. Obviously, Frampton's been there and done it. He's had the belts. He's had the world titles before. Josh, what a fighter. He's hard work. He's got the backing of Leeds behind him. He put in a great performance against Lee Selby. Not many picked him to get that win. And I think the stars are going to gel, and it's going to be a great, great fight.
Who's going to win?
Do you know what? I like them both, and I think if Josh can get that performance, what he done against Selby, then it'd be a hard man to beat. But I think that sort of performance would only happen in that stadium with all these fans. So I think it might be a hard one to roll that again and get a performance like that to beat Frampton. So I'll go maybe Frampton win. Sorry, Josh.
Well, Steve, Bradley Skink says he wants the European title, and he said he doesn't mind having a rematch with Laharaha. What about that?
Yeah, well, look, he'd love the rematch. He's convinced that wasn't him in the ring that night in Bilbao. When was it? End of April this year. That was a 50-50 fight to most people. Nobody could pick a winner. And, if you know, it was only because Bradley was away that it was 50-50. A bit in this country, Bradley would have been quite a warm favourite. But Laharaha proved he is a bit of a beast, certainly at European level on the welterweight circuit. So the chances of Bradley getting that match, I would say, are very, very slim, because Laharaha beat him in two rounds. So how would he sell that fight in Spain? Obviously, Bradley would want it. He's a fighting man. Bradley's not going to fight for the British title at the moment because his friend and stablemate Johnny Garton has that. There's no way they're going to fight. So he's looking down that European route, and I'm guessing he's hoping Laharaja relinquishes that title and goes to America. There is a lot of, I mean, he does do some work with Lou DiBella, and there's a lot of talk that he's going to start appearing on DiBella shows in America. And you'd imagine Laharaja would be a popular fighter in America, given the way he fights and puts people away. But the chance of that fight happening, I don't want to, you know, dampen Bradley's day at all. We on his chips, but I just can't see the rematch happening at all. But I understand why Bradley wants it. But Bradley now, he cannot afford, you know, you think if there's another loss, just where does he go?
The mindset of wanting the rematch, though, I'll have to give this to him. It is admirable. I don't think it's going to happen. I think Laharaha is going to move on to world level. He's he's got a very likable style, a very fan friendly style. So yeah, I see that happening as well. He's also, Bradley Skeet said there, he's got absolutely no interest in facing Frankie Gavin. What do you think about that? He said he's about as much use as a chocolate teapot to him.
You know what? I've got to be honest. Before Frankie fought Laraja the other week, I generally thought he'd trained properly for this fight and done everything right. He claims things went wrong on the week of the fight, but to come in 5 pound overweight, you know, it's been a problem throughout his career weight. And I should think he wouldn't trust him. You know, Bradley, if they were matched for some sort of title, I don't think Bradley would trust him making the weight. And that's what it seems Bradley's getting at now. And he's got no interest in him. But you never know. If suddenly the vacant EBU title come up and the EBU said to Frank Warren and to Frankie Gavin's promoters, we're matching those two, it makes a different sense. If there was a title on the line, Bradley might be tempted. But I don't think he's going to fight Frankie just for the sake of it.
And Gavin's getting pretty vocal on social media, trying to call him out. And Bradley Skeet seems to be having none of it.
There's not a lot for Frankie out there, is there?
Because no.
A lot of people aren't going to take him on after the last fight against Laraja. I haven't spoken to Frankie since, so I have no idea what went wrong. If something did go wrong fight week or it was its training, I've no idea. But he's got history, hasn't he, now?
He has. His reputation's kind of tarred by this whole weight thing. Fun time, Frankie. Well, another thing Bradley mentioned there was about Khan versus Brooks. So you asked him, you know, do you want to fight them kind of thing? He said they need to fight each other. And he says the fight needs to happen. There's been a lot happening this week with the whole Khan and Brooks situation, with Khan being linked to fighting Terence Crawford and Brooke kind of chasing the fight with Khan. What's your stance on it all?
I don't blame Amir Khan for going to the Terence Crawford fight, even if it's less money. Amir Khan, as you know, I'm a big fan of. Yeah. I often defend him. I don't blame him going for the Crawford fight. There might be less. There might be. I don't know. I'm not sure what deal he's been offered by Bob Arum, but there will be less money. You know, I think there'll be less money than there would fighting Kell Brook next. But he's never ducked away from a challenge, Amir Khan. You know, and it's just daring to be great again. I mean, Rocky Fielding goes to fight Canelo Alvarez next week. He's daring to be great. Amir Khan goes to fight Terence Crawford, and all the social, you know, these so nutcases on social media who hammer him say he's being an idiot thinking he can beat Crawford, but the other people are being told they're daring to be great. That's all he's daring to be. He's, you know, these people that lay into Amir Khan, he's had an absolutely stunning career. Olympic silver medal at 17. You know, quite remarkable. You know, losing to Bredius Prescott and then, you know, two fights later, beating Marco Antonio Barrera, albeit a shadow of himself, but still beating Barrera. The next fight, beating Cattell next to become a world champion. And then, you know, you had the controversy around, you know, the Lamont Peterson fight where he lost a split decision. You know, the Danny Garcia fight, he got chinned after, you know, making mistakes. You know, no, well, fair and beaten fair and square. And then, you know, he's still bouncing back. I think it was the Devin, you know, Louis Collazo, he was very good. Devin, yeah. Alexander, you know, you go back to 2010, and I think almost 8 years ago, to the day almost, when he fought Marcos Medina. That was one of the great Las Vegas fights he's been involved in. How does that win lock since? You know, he went up and fought Canelo Alvarez and got chinned. You know, but he went up there. I don't blame him for going this path. But where I do disagree with Amir a bit, he says the Brook fight's always there. But with every fight he had, you know, every fight, you know, look, I'm not going to tip him to beat Crawford, as big a fan I am. But if he loses to Crawford, the fight against Brook diminishes even more than what it already is. It's certainly not what it was 2 years ago now. So, look, who knows whether they're going to, you know, he could still suddenly, something could go wrong with the Crawford fight. It doesn't happen, and he drops into the Brook fight. But I don't blame him chasing this Crawford fight right now. And if you listen to Amir Khan, it's quite close.
Well, even I found myself in a position this week, Steve, and that was a very passionate improv speech there on Amir Khan. I know you've been a big fan and you're a fierce defender of him. And I found myself on social media this week just being like, hold on, because you see people like, you saw basically there seems to be an agenda to try and pressure him into taking this Brook fight, which I understand from one side of it. But it felt like it was in poor taste. It was like Carl Froch calling him out, saying, oh, aren't you disappointed that he's avoiding Kell Brook? I'm like, hold on. To fight Terence Crawford, by the way, for less money. So he is putting legacy before money. That's to be applauded for me.
It is. And you know what? There's a lot of you know, the stuff that goes Amir Khan's way, the abuse over the years and people having a go at him is so unfair. I've got my own beliefs why, but there you go. It's not to discuss on a boxing podcast.
Well, Kell Brook's back this weekend. He's fighting Michael Zarafa up in Sheffield. Steve, any thoughts on that? It's kind of a stay busy. You'd imagine he's going to push on to something bigger next year.
Look, you know what? People are, you know, criticising the fight. You just can't win. I'm not going to have a go at Kell for fighting Michael Zarafa.
He's got a fight, hasn't he?
He's got a fight. You know, it's his first fight without Dominic Ingle in the corner, which, you know, as the Ingle clan have been with him for quite a good chunk of his career. He hasn't fought since, you know, if you go back, he fought Errol Spence. When was it? April or May 2017? All he's had in 18 months since Errol Spence, a heavy loss, is about a 5-minute blowout of Rabchenko.
Yeah.
No, that's all he's had.
So I'm hearing noises this fight week for Kell Brook that he's really considering going back down to 147. I think it's a kind of you look at the landscape at £154. They're not massive names there. They're gonna be. Jarrett Hurd is gonna be a big name. The Charlos are gonna be big names, but right now they're not, and they're monsters. And you just think that maybe at this point in Kell Brook's career, going up in weight is gonna be too tough. But the likes of Danny Garcia, people like that, Porter, who he's already beat at 147, they appear to now be the targets if he can't land Amir Khan.
That's right. There's champions, you know, is Keith Thurman going to come back at 147, possible fight. You know, there's fights for him. And you know what? He's still a man who went 11 rounds with Errol Spence. You know, so there's that almost. I don't want to ever call him a gatekeeper. I feel a bit for Kell because his career should have been better than what it has been. Now, to me, you know, them two fights against Golovkin or Spence, we talk about Amir Khan daring to be something else. He was in those two fights as well. So, we've got to cut Kell Brook some slack here. You know what? People will look at him. They'll see he's lost to Golovkin. They'll see he's lost to Spence. Or can we get him out of the way quicker? I can see him against the Thurman or somebody. I can see why he's going. He wants to go back down to 147, but he's got to be able to do it safely and not go down to, you know, and just boil himself down to 147 just because there's an opportunity there.
Well, it's an interesting story to follow. What's Kell Brook going to do? What's Amir Khan going to do? And also, what's Bradley Skeet going to do? So he's back in action next weekend on December the 15th. He is resurgent. That's a show from the Brentwood Centre. That's live on BT. That's headlined by Daniel Dubois against Razvan Kajanu. And we're going to have Daniel Dubois. We're going to hear from him on next week's podcast. Looking forward to that. Well, not only is it fight week for Kell Brook, it's also fight week for the man who may well be the best boxer in the world. Yes, Vasyl Lomachenko is in action this weekend. And Steve Lillis has delivered. The Hall of Fame promoter, the man who promoted Muhammad Ali, the man who promoted Sugar Ray Leonard, the man who promotes Vasyl Lomachenko, Bob Arum. Here's what he had to say about this weekend's lightweight unification from Madison Square Garden.
Pedraza has a really good style, and it's going to be a test for Lomachenko. That being said, I really believe Loma is one of the best, if not the best, fighter out there. And it's going to be very interesting to see how Loma copes with the style of Pedraza.
He comes across all sorts of styles, but Pedraza's quite a difficult opponent for anybody, isn't he?
Yes, he is. He's a real sniper and a very, very good boxer, and he moves extraordinarily well.
You know, with Lomachenko, where do you go in the future for him? Because he admits himself he can't go up too many more weights.
Well, you know, we the IBF has a vacant title, and there's an African kid named Colby who's hopefully win that title, and Loma could fight him. And then, of course, there's a good 130 pounds is Rochelle, the Mexican, who's a real banger, a tough guy that Loma could fight. There are Javante Davis is another guy. There are plenty of future opponents for Loma to fight.
And Anthony Crawler, is he the WBA mandatory now?
Well, let Gilberto fight him. I mean, where does Crawler figure is the man to third. Number four, he's really a third-rate fighter. So, we'll address that when we have to address that. But this is a joke that the WBA makes him a man to third.
Yeah, and also on the bill, of course, is Britain and Africa's very own Isaac Dogbe, who has you gave him his first world title fight when he caused an upset to win it, and he's become one of the finds of this year.
Yeah, he's a terrific young man, very articulate, very exciting, and he really, people love to watch him fight. And he's in very, very tough with this Navarrete, a very tough Mexican fighter that could be the fight of the night on Saturday.
I mean, what are you expecting from Dogbe? Are you expect him to move up or clean up the super bantamweight division if he can?
He's going to clean up the super bantamweight division. He was having trouble making 122, but we're going to get him a nutritionist. You know, at his size, he shouldn't have much difficulty at 122.
Of course, another one of your fighters who's boxing in Manchester in a couple of weeks is Michael Conlon. If he comes through this test in a couple of weeks, what hopes do you have in 2019 for him?
Well, we're going to, gear Michael up for probably at the end of 2019 to fight for world title. He's coming up, he's coming into his own. He's a terrific young man. He's a very, very good fighter, a big attraction. And we have high hopes for Michael.
Top Rank have got a fantastic record of building fighters. Do you see him against another one of your fighters, Shakur Stevenson, possibly as a super fight 18 months down the line?
Well, maybe a couple of years down the line, I'd like them each to develop sufficiently where they consider the top fighter in their weight class, whether it's 126 or 130, and then they go at each other in a super, maybe pay-per-view fight. I just don't want to do that fight as a one-off. I want to do that fight when it really means something for both the boys.
Another one of your Box Nation regulars is Terence Crawford, who rivals Lomachenko to be the pound-for-pound king. There's talk of him fighting Amir Khan. Is that possible?
I would hope so. I would like to do that fight. It's up to Amir Khan to accept that fight. He made a proposal to him, and let's see what happens. I'd love Amir Khan. Is a terrific fighter. He's talked about fighting the best. He wants to make big money. Well, he has the opportunity now to fight Terence Crawford.
For big money, I dare say.
Yes, that's correct.
Would you go pay-per-view with that fight in America?
Yes.
So that would be, Crawford, that would be the fight that really breaks him out into a pay-per-view star, wouldn't it?
That's correct.
And just one final question, Bob. Your thoughts on the Tyson Fury-Deontay Wilder fight at the weekend?
Well, I watched it. We had a great fight up in Quebec, light heavyweight championship. And afterwards, we were in the VIP room watching on television the Wilder Fury fight, and we all had Fury clearly winning 9 rounds. I don't know what fight some of the judges were watching. I mean, particularly the Mexican judge who scored the fight for Wilder, but we had Fury comfortably ahead.
Well, do you think this issue with judging is something that, but it would always be a debate in boxing?
It seems that it would. Judging is a very subjective thing, and fighting, judges see a fight from their position at ringside. They only see it from one side, and that's the nature of judging in boxing. And sometimes they may miss what people who are watching on television can see, what people who are in the stadium can see, who see it from different angles. But, the English judge had to fight a draw. I can't see that, but maybe it's conceivable. He had 7 rounds to 5 for Fury, and Wilder had 2 extra points from knockdown. That made it a draw. I mean, maybe that's debatable, but the Mexican judge who had Wilder winning that fight, what the hell fight was he watching?
Steve, I've got to give it to you. On the first episode of the Boxing Podcast, you have delivered boxing royalty. You've delivered Bob Arum. Well done.
Well, the big names speak to the big podcast, and the Boxing Podcast is just that, Dev.
Oh, absolutely. So he's got a big show this weekend. He's got Vasyl Lomachenko returning in a lightweight unification against Jose Pedraza. That one's on Box Nation. That's got to be a Lomachenko win, right?
Oh, you think so? The only thing you think against Lomachenko is he coming back too soon after that shoulder injury he suffered against Jorge Linares? What a performance that was that night. It was the stuff that fighters who are going to be in the Hall of Fame and become all-time greats do against Linares. You know, his right shoulder, it was torn labrum, whatever part of the right shoulder that is, in round two. It needed surgery. You know, he got up, he you know, shook that off, got floored by a straight right in the sixth round. And then from then on, was spiteful, seemed to enjoy hammering Jorge Linares. And he won like special fighters do. And to be a three-weight world champion in, what is it, in 11 fights and beating men like Gary Russell, Roman Martinez, and guys like Rigondeau and Nicholas Walters, he's just something else. He's one of the finest I've ever seen. He just works out opponents out. And then when he's got that rhythm, he just enjoys bashing them up. Will he be beaten again? You know, he was old manned out by Salido. The only thing I think that ever beats this man in a boxing ring is going up through the weights too many. He knows he can't go up too many as well. That's the only thing that can stop him. And it's just a shame it looks like we're robbed of the Mikey Garcia fight.
Yeah, exactly what I was going to come to. So, yeah, exactly. That's what I was going to come to. So, Mikey Garcia, he's got the WBC belt. I think he's given up the IBF now, as Bob Arum touched upon. That, for me, is the dream fight. But Garcia, he's doing a real... You know, he was talking about dare to be great earlier. He's daring to be super great. I mean, how dare he do that? Step up to welterweight to fight Errol Spence. That fight seems to be on hold just now.
Yeah, it's on hold, you know, and I think, what is it, the difference, 135 to, you know, to 147, that's a lot of poundage he's going to be putting up. So if he was coming back to lightweight, Mikey Garcia, if he got pounded to defeat pretty spectacularly by Errol Spence, he will be coming back to lightweight. And when you start having to lose weight again, it always seems to affect performances. And they'll always refer to Roy Jones going up to heavyweight, winning the WBA title against John Ruiz. Then when he started losing weight again, he was nowhere near the same fighter. So it's a great shame that fight's gone. It was that should have been one of the super fights for next year, but I think that's gone. And as you heard in the interview, Bob Arum, he's not too keen on facing Anthony Crawler, as the WBA have ordered. And he's looking at the winner of the likely IBF fight between Richard Commey and Issa Chani, if there's talk that's going to go on early February on the Kovalev card.
You feel like he doesn't want to get bogged down with kind of mandatories and kind of fights that just, you know, they're fights. Every fight seems to mean something now for Lomachenko. So if it's to pick up another belt at lightweight, that's quite something. That feels like something you do, and then maybe move up and try and pick a champion at the weight above and just keep being great. That's what he does.
I don't think we did a Box Nation meets Vasyl Lomachenko, and in that interview he was quite clear that he'd never fight Crawford because of size, and he could possibly only do one more weight, and even then he wasn't sure. So even at 140 pound, at super lightweight, it would have to be the right champion. I don't think he'd be taking on an exceptional 147 pound fighter who's coming down. You know, and that's not because he's just being realistic.
Yeah, well, do you know what? He could end up with someone like the winner of the World Boxing Super Series. What a fight that would be. Yeah, imagine that. If the styles match up, if it's someone that he thinks, you know, do you know what? He's a vulnerable kind of a champion. Imagine him and Josh Taylor.
I wouldn't rule that. That could happen. That would be frightening prospect, that fight. Absolutely frightening. But it would have to, he's not stupid. It'd have to be the right fights. And, you know, he's in an awkward situation because, you know, the idea, I'm sure the, you know, top rank have made sure he's learned English. They put him on these tours, putting him around the world. And the thing for him to become a pay-per-view fighter, he's got to take these risk fights, these gambling fights where he jumps through weights. And, you know, and I worry that's the thing that might get him beat one day again.
Absolutely. Well, also this weekend, the man who's back is another world champion, And he's another one. He's your mate, Steve. You did a Box Nation meets Vasyl Lomachenko. I've seen you've done a Box Nation meets Isaac Dogbe. So he's your man. He's back as well, isn't he?
I dare anyone not to like little Isaac. he's one of the nicest fellas you could ever wish to meet, and that's no exaggeration. He's a lovely, lovely, wonderful man, and the people around him are all the same. And he's got his second defence this week against Emmanuel Navratilov, who's got 25 wins, 22 KOs, only one defeat. But hey, Navratilov could be one of these mystery men. He looks as if he's been carefully matched, and this is his first fight outside of Mexico. Dogbe gives the impression that he's a fighter that's improved tenfold for the shock win over Jesse Magdaleno. He's had one defence since against Ataki, the Japanese challenger, and he blasted him away in a round. I'm going to really follow this career with interest from now on, Dogbe. He could be anything. I don't think he can, he's only 5'3". I think that could stop him going to featherweight. And Bob Arum said they're trying to get dietitians involved to make sure they can try and keep him at super bantamweight and not move him up until he cleans up the division against Ray Vargas, Daniel Roman and TJ Dehaney, the other champions. You know what? There's some good fights there, but if he comes through Navratilov, you'd back him against the other three champions.
Steve, how about this one? This is one that I've been thinking about, right? Huge fight for Africa. So imagine this. Come with me on this journey. Zolani Tete wins the World Boxing Super Series, yeah? Defies all odds. He goes through Inoue. Imagine that. And then he beats his chest and he says, I'm going to go up. I'm going to go up to 122 pounds and I want Dogbe and I want him in Ghana. How about that?
It's one of the fights you dream of, isn't it? I mean, and you know what? You've come up with a fight there and it wouldn't be the most difficult to make either. Dogbe's with Top Rank and Bob Arum. Zolani Tete, your big pals with Frank Warren. Frank Warren and Top Rank do serious business together and have done for many years. So I'm sure if the pounds, dollars, whatever currency they're talking in makes sense, that would be a hell of a fight to make for Africa. It must probably be the biggest all-Africa fight ever. You know, South Africa against Ghana. It would be a massive event for, you know, has there been a bigger all-African fight against two men who actually live on the African continent? Although Dogbe is in London most of his 60% of his time. Yeah, Kennington. Yeah. It's really interesting fight. I like that fight a lot now you've done that bit of match.
Yeah, I've planted the seed.
When you see Frank Warren next, you get in there, shut the door, say, Frank, I've got a fight you can make. And then you don't leave that office. And when you're in Frank's office, they're sitting in the chair opposite. You don't leave that desk until he gives you a contract guaranteeing you a percentage of the fight because you made it first.
I want that percentage split. So, Steve, this is something I've wanted to do for months. Yeah, it's a question I've been meaning to ask you. It's been on my mind. There's nights that I can't sleep. Yeah, I'm trying to sleep and then suddenly I'm up and I'm thinking, if only I could ask him, well, Steve, what you talking about, Lillis?
What am I talking about, Dev? I'm talking about the Fury family.
Ooh.
And we've got Tyson's younger brother, Tommy, making his debut at the Manchester Arena on December 22nd. Now, what there is in the genes of this family, I don't know. I think I can think of about 9 or 10 of them that are boxed professionally. And Tommy's the latest. And you know what? There's going to be even more pressure on him because of what his big brother's done 2 weeks earlier. How good is he? I haven't got a clue. I'm going to be honest. I haven't got a clue. Ricky Hatton's really excited. Yeah. Big John Fury, who you don't argue with, is really excited about him. His father. I've interviewed him and he is the sweetest. He's more like someone who should be on Love Island than the boxing ring. Look at him. He's quite astonishing that, you know, he's fighting this in a couple of weeks. And now the eyes are going to be on him. The pressure that must be on him. He's about 20 years of age and people are looking at him, expecting him to just defy everything and be the next great Fury. And it doesn't always work like this. You know, some are retired through eye injuries. Some haven't had so much success. Yui Fury's still at world level, their cousin. And now we've got Tommy Fury, who's going to campaign at light heavyweight. I'm just fascinated by this whole family. You know, there should be some sort of film on them.
Yeah.
And now it's Tommy Fury, who's Ricky Hatton's protege.
Well, that's just it. Like, I haven't seen him, like, any of his amateur fights and anything like that. You say you haven't seen it, but when you've got someone like Ricky Hatton training him and talking him up, then, I mean, you've got to listen. So he must be all right.
Look, we were talking to John Fury about this the other week, and John's a straight... You ask John a question, he answers it, whether you like the answer or not. And you know what? There's pressure on him through being on this big bill, not just being, you know, like other debutants on that bill for their first professional fight. Even more so having Tyson as your big brother. But also, as the dad, Big John, pointed out, the nepotism is working for him. Because, in all honesty, if he didn't have Tyson as his brother, he wouldn't be anywhere near this show. He'll be on a small show and manage to fight in four rounds on a small hall show.
But he's not, and he'll be on the Warrington Frampton show on December 22nd. That one's BT Sport Box Office. That's at the end of December. Yeah, there's plenty of boxing coming up before that. The week before that, December 15th, the Brentwood show. Yeah, you got Daniel Dubois, Razvan Kajanu, Bradley Skeets in action as well. Sonny Edwards, who we'll hear from on next week's show, is in a cracking little fight against Junior Granados, a man who gave Jamie Conlon all he could handle 3 years ago. And before all of that, this Saturday night, Vasyl Lomachenko aims to unify the lightweight division. That's going to be on Box Nation. He's got Isaac Dogbe, Steve's new best friend, with him. Steve, episode one of the boxing podcast. How was it? How did you feel?
You know what? It was like I've been doing these for years in a previous life, these podcasts. I don't know what it was, but I've never done one before, ever.
It is strange. It is strange. Well, remember to tweet us any comments at Steve Lillis, at Sarnie Dev. Feel free to leave us an iTunes review as well. You'll find us. Leave us a little review on there. I'll take sort of anything upwards of 4 stars, because I know we just sort of got started. It's our first episode. It's the first one we've ever done. So, you know, just leave us some reviews on that. But that's good night from me, Dev Sarnie. Steve, say good night.
Good night. God bless. See you next week.
See you next week. Cheers.